Welcome to Counterforce, CITR's Thursday public affairs program, which addresses the issue of global peace and justice. Today's show is The World According to Caldicott. Hi, I'm Harry Herceg, your host on Counterforce. Today's show features part of an emotional and inspiring talk given by Dr. Helen Caldicott, head of Physicians for Social Responsibility. Dr. Caldicott is a world-renowned peace activist who became a virtual household name after her lecture was taped for the Canadian film If You Love This Planet. This Oscar-winning documentary was also labeled as propaganda by the Reagan administration. Dr. Caldicott spoke at UBC in July 83 as part of the public program at the World Council of Churches General Assembly. Her talk was sponsored by Project Plowshares Coffee House for Peace and Justice, which brought in many noted speakers over the course of the 2.5-week assembly. I had the fortunate opportunity of seeing her at UBC, and it really was an incredible experience listening to someone who has such an emotional appeal and impact in their presentation. We're about to listen to a portion of her talk where she describes the relationship between the two superpowers and how this could lead to nuclear war and how this affects us. We'll start off where Helen Caldicott recalls a luncheon date she had with U.S. President Ronald Reagan.
I spent an hour and a quarter with President Reagan, alone with his daughter. He's not very bright. I say that because clinically as a physician, it worries me immensely. Because the two people in America who have the authority to press the button are called the National Command Authority, the NCA. They are the President and the Secretary of Defense. I think the Secretary of Defense's IQ is a little higher than Reagan's, but he doesn't know very much about defense. In fact, a reporter from the LA Times went to Bechtel, where Weinberger used to work. You know, Bechtel builds nuclear reactors. And he interviewed George Shultz and Caspar Weinberger. And both of them independently said, you can ask me anything you like, but don't ask me about foreign affairs or about defense, because I don't know anything about those subjects. So we're in the hands of incompetent people who don't know anything. I repeat, who don't know anything. Practically everything that President Reagan told me was inaccurate. And when I tried to correct him, he didn't really hear. And when I tried to debate with him, he had no background knowledge to support any statement he made. And he is the person who, if there's a nuclear war, is going to run to the helicopter, fly to Andrews Air Force Base, and then go up in the airborne command and fly in an airplane above the nuclear war as the explosions are taking place underneath and direct the nuclear war by computers. He said the other day he doesn't understand anything about computers. He doesn't. He's never done any science. Can you imagine? That man has 4.5 billion people in the palm of his hand, and he's about to go down and ravage those little countries in Central America and kill people. As a physician and a mother, I can't imagine killing another human being. In fact, sometimes I've made mistakes with patients. I didn't kill anyone, but I thought I'd give up medicine if I injured or damaged another human being. Where are those men's heads? And I stress, they're men. I think they've got a case of acute androgen poisoning. Okay, now, so the Soviet Union's got 20,000 nuclear weapons. America can overkill every Russian person 40 times. That means I always have a picture. You kill them and then they all get resurrected and stand up again and say, where's the next bomb? And then you kill them, and that's called overkill by the Pentagon. Ridiculous. medically ridiculous. And Russia can overkill every American person. That means Canada as well, 20 times. There are enough weapons for the equivalent of 3 tons of TNT for every man, woman, and child on the planet. But President Reagan says we don't have enough and we have to build another 17,000 in the next 10 years. Now, who else has nuclear weapons? You're supporting them. Canada's going to test cruise missiles here. I also had lunch with the... America's going to test cruise missiles in Canada with the... Well, okay, good. I had lunch with your Prime Minister the other day.
Is he smart?
He's smart. He's smart, yeah. He's also a very good man. And you know, he's got 3 little boys. But I think that the stresses of political life over 20 years have worn him down a bit. And he feels he can be more influential in NATO by testing the cruise missiles here. And I said, you're wrong, and that's amoral. And I really begged him to go and see Andropov, and he may well. He is a state's... He's a statesman, highly respected by the people of the world. I told him that. He liked it. And I think he believed it. But he could do some wonderful things, and I begged him to stand up for the whole of the people of the world who aren't in Russia and America, 92% of the world's people, and be their leader. I said, please, be their leader. Other countries have got nuclear weapons, you know. France, who's absolutely incorrigible. I know that because they used to test weapons near Australia, and I led the movement in Australia to stop them and get them to go underground, but they're polluting the South Pacific most dreadfully with plutonium and radioactive elements, the fish, the indigenous people. Dreadful. Just the same as America has done. Do you know why bikini bathing suit is called that? Because they tested a hydrogen bomb over the Bikini Atoll and split it in two. So America's been doing that all the time. Britain's got nuclear weapons. Why on earth Britain has them, I don't know. I think she still wants to be a great empire and can't understand why she isn't. And then India's tested one, and South Africa's almost certainly got one, and they say Israel has about 200. And so that's called lateral proliferation of nuclear weapons, which destabilizes the balance of terror built up by the superpowers. And by the year 2000, there'll be many, many countries who can have nuclear weapons. The only way to stop it is for the superpowers to start behaving themselves. They signed the Non-Proliferation Treaty in 1968, promising that if no one else built nuclear weapons, they would start to disarm bilaterally. And they've done exactly the opposite. They can't police the world. They have no moral leg to stand on without behaving responsibly like adults themselves, and they behave like children. Okay, so that's a physical examination, quite briefly. Now, the prognosis, how long are we going to survive? Well, the Pentagon's produced a new 5-year war plan which calls for the capability of the United States to fight and win a protracted nuclear war over a 6-month period, and that's called the Defense Guidance Plan. It's been signed by Caspar Weinberger. To that end, they're building the weapons to do it. The Trident II missile, which is extraordinarily accurate to be launched from Trident submarines. There will be enough weapons on one Trident sub to destroy every major city in the Northern Hemisphere, and America plans to build about 30 of them. The cost of 1/3 of one Trident submarine would eradicate malaria in the world. They're building the MX missile, a first-strike nuclear weapon to be used to fight and win a nuclear war. They're building the cruise missile, which is unverifiable, and once that's deployed, that's the end of arms control, period. They're building the Pershing II, which is to be used for decapitation of the Soviet Command, Control and Communication Center in Moscow. And it gets there in 6 minutes after launching from West Germany. Now, normally it takes 30 minutes for the rockets to get here, so you can think, gee, have the computers made a mistake again? Have you got War Games here yet? Is that film here? Have the computers fouled up again? Should we press a button or shouldn't we? Let's call the president and ask him. Well, anyway, at least in 30 minutes there's time for human input. Not much, but a little. In 6 minutes there's no time. By the time the satellites pick up the launch and send it back to headquarters, it's almost too late. They will have struck. So the Soviet Union say they're going to use a system called Launch on Warning, where computers detect the attack and fire the missiles without any human input. Now, you all know from your bank accounts that computers make mistakes. Some days you're a millionaire, some days you're bankrupt. Very serious. And we've got till 1984 to turn it round. Those weapons are being built to fight and win a nuclear war. And America's a long way ahead of the Soviet Union, technologically speaking, and in most of the weapons it's producing. The other thing is that the Soviet computers are very archaic compared to the American computers, but America is fierce that it won't sell advanced technology to the Soviet Union. You might think it might be in our best interest for them to have decent computers. So the prognosis is grim. Some people say, this is hearsay, that the talk in the White House is not if but when there's a nuclear war. I told you about the status of the president. The hot, Cold War is heating up. The president said to me, the Russians are all totally evil, godless communists. And I said, have you ever met one? And he said, no. That is a definition of clinical paranoia. Definition of clinical paranoia is when you're sitting in a bus, the paranoid patient is sitting in a bus, and they know in their mind for a fact, without any objective evidence, that the person next to them has a gun, hidden. So they get their gun and shoot the person next to them before the other person shoots them. That is clinical paranoia. It's just exactly the same as what the president said to me. He wouldn't institutionalize him unless you thought that he might be dangerous to the future health of the world. Should the presidents have a psychiatric examination once every 6 months? Should they have a neurological examination every 6 months to make sure he's an old man, that he hasn't got a small vessel obstructed? Same with Andropov, or a tumor, or something happening, and that he could do something crazy to kill all of us before the diagnosis has been established? These are clinical questions I'm posing to you, which should be answered by us. There are no checks and balances at all, certainly in the United States. I don't know about the Soviet Union. So the prognosis is grim. It could be happening tomorrow. The button could be being pressed right now. In the half an hour I speak to you, just imagine it's been pressed. It could happen next year. Is that little child who's making a noise now going to grow up? I doubt it at the moment. Okay, let's move on to the pathogenesis. How is all this happening and why is it happening? Have you ever heard of the Iron Triangle? The Iron Triangle is the Pentagon, the Congress, and the military-industrial complex, and the scientists who design the weapons and keep designing them. And the scientists say it's terrific fun, merving a missile. Hands up the who knows what a merved missile is. Okay? A MIRV missile is an MX, a huge missile, and it's got 10 hydrogen bombs in the top. That's called multiple independent re-entry vehicle. How to put 10 hydrogen bombs in a missile and have them go off each independently through space and land very accurately on target. That's called MIRVing. So you have an insoluble problem, how to MIRV a missile, and you solve it. And it's terrific fun. And the men who make the weapons say if they move on to doing things that are for life and not for death, it gets to be quite boring because the problems they're solving are really very fascinating. They call them technically sweet. So at Lawrence Livermore Labs in California and at Los Alamos and Sandia in New Mexico, there are lots of scientists, thousands of them, designing these weapons, more and more all the time. And then there's the industrial complex. Almost every corporation you can name is involved in making weapons and wiring up the earth like a time bomb ready to explode. You can't buy bonds in America from any firm who isn't involved in the arms race. It's just absolutely ubiquitous. All the banks are involved, the auditing companies, the boards, there's an incestuous relationship. People are on the board of one company and another and on the board of the banks. And then there are the congressmen voting for the weapons all the time and vying jealously, wanting the corporations to build factories in their suburbs and their districts because that provides jobs and brings money in. The whole of America is wired up by the military-industrial complex. One in two people in Los Angeles work making weapons. One in two. More about 58 cents out of every federal tax dollar people pay goes to the death industry. And these aren't like Hitler's death camps. This is Auschwitz personified. Okay. So, and then there's a sort of an incestuous relationship. People, well, Alexander Haig epitomizes it. He was head of NATO. He left and became head of United Technologies, one of the biggest corporations making weapons. Then he went to the State Department, right? He wasn't too hot at Secretary of State. So now he's back at United Technologies, you see. And so they vacillate between, and they've got the whole thing tied up, and it's an old boys' club, and people can't enter it, especially us, the people, the public. There's no entree. And they're all men, and they have terrific, well, they have fun. They entertain each other. They go to hunting lodges, and they practice lobbying and bribery. There's a lot of fraud. There are cost overruns. Billions and billions and billions of dollars spent on it. $600 billion a year, and two-thirds of the world's children are malnourished and starving. They've taken leave of their senses. Taken leave of their senses. They're going to start killing people in Nicaragua. Now, Henry Kissinger, he's the head of the new commission for that. He had a heart bypass, a coronary artery bypass several years ago. I wonder if he values his life. I suppose he does, because he's fairly egocentric. I suppose he thinks Henry Kissinger is very important. What about the children in Nicaragua? Are they important? Is not every single human life a gift from God and as precious as any other single human life? So that's the dynamics of the pathology. In Russia, they have the same sort of system. You know, there isn't a democracy in the United States. It's socialism for the rich and capitalism for the poor. And the same thing happens in Russia. The people who make the weapons, it's not, they don't make money out of it. They don't make huge profits, but they have a lot of power in the government. But the people have abrogated their democracy in America. They don't have one. I was there on the day the MX was defeated last year. And in the halls of the Congress, the Pentagon had 1,500 lobbyists. There were lobbyists from Raytheon, Rockwell International, GTE, Sylvania, all making parts of the weapons, and lots of subcontractors who make screws for the MX and all sorts of things. The halls were full of these characters. They were like ants. I felt like bopping them on the head because they were medically contraindicated. Where were the people? Where were the people and their children? They weren't there. Why weren't they there? Because they're very comfortable. And all they care about is driving their cars and getting their air conditioning going. And I'm not talking about you, but the majority of people in the United States are like that. They don't give a damn. They don't even vote. Now, you don't have a democracy unless you vote. You don't have a democracy unless you accept responsibility. And there is not a working democracy. People in other countries are dying to have a democracy. In Afghanistan, right? South Africa, El Salvador, all over the world. And we've got one, and we violate it. All of us. All of us.
You've been listening to world-renowned Australian peace activist Dr. Helen Caldicott, who gave an emotional talk at UBC in July 83. She gave us the perspective of the world according to Caldicott. I'm Harry Herchig for Counterforce on CITR, FM 102, Cable 100.